Hello and welcome to another episode of the Two Bros Podcast. We are Two Bros. This is the Two Bros Podcast. Welcome, welcome. And this, ladies and gentlemen, is episode number 99. Wow, it's been quite a journey. When was the first episode? September 2020? I think it's been close to 3 years now that I've been doing this. Fairly irregular because of, work and me not wanting to, I guess. But yeah, we've made it to 99 episodes. And yeah, I guess thanks for sticking around. If you're still here, if you're a new subscriber, welcome. If you're an old listener, well, I mean, I'm glad you've stuck around this far. Planning something big for episode 100. I still don't know what it is. If you have some suggestions, then I'm open to it. I mean, my brother gave me some ideas, hoping to get him back for a comeback episode. But we'll see how that goes. As the title suggests, in this episode, we are going to talk about how one, you know, goes about applying to universities in the USA in particular. It is one of the, you know, more recent endeavors that I've indulged in. Not entirely out of a whim. It was a conscious decision, but I wasn't entirely sure how successful it would be. But, we'll get into it. But a little bit of a backstory here. I mean, people who know me know about this already, but I've been... I've been in the merchant navy for the last 12 years. I've been working with one of the biggest companies there is. And I basically started with them right after class 12. Like, I basically had a job right after 12th. Now, you know, you're already with the company. And, you trained as a cadet with them. And then once you cleared your competency exams, you joined as an officer with them. And I've not switched companies. I mean, in merchant navy, it's quite common for people to switch company. Whoever's offering a flexible contract or more money or whatever, people just flock. However, I was pretty sorted with this company. And things were well. I mean, yes, you can take the marginal, less salary than compared to the others. I didn't mind. For me, it was the comfort and the quality of life. And, it was good. It was a good life. Till the time, you know, I felt that things started to change and the companies, the feel of the company just started to change. It just became like any other company. It became profit-minded and employees took a backseat and certain incidents happened, which I'll not get into, which made me question if I want to continue this quest because it didn't feel like Merchant Navy is what it used to be. It just... It didn't feel good to be in that position. And honestly, it was a big decision I had to make because it's a good life. I was doing 3 months on, 3 months off, and I had basically 6 months of vacation in a year, and it was a paid vacation. So I could have done anything I wanted, and I did for the longest time. Indulged in so many courses, did so many things. It's too bad that it's roughly coincided with the pandemic years. I mean, before when I was a junior officer, I used to do 5 months at sea at a time. So it was like in a year, 10 months, I would be out at sea. You know, that was a very long time. But I picked up my rank in 2018 or something. And shortly after the pandemic hit, and I couldn't do much. But I did make most of it. I mean, I learned so many things. I did so many courses and I got so many experiences. So I was quite happy with that life. It was a good life. But life on board changed dramatically. And I mean, the two consecutive back-to-back ships, which were just, let's say, horrible. And it made me question, like, do I really need to do this? Can I really do this for the rest of my life? Because the rest of your life is a very long time. And the funny thing is, if you'd asked me 2 years ago, what would I be doing for the rest of my life? I would have easily said, you know, Merchant Navy, it's a good life. Why would I change anything? But I guess that's how life is. I will admit that I was in a comfort bubble and... doing anything else just didn't seem logical to me. I was fully prepared to like buy a house, plant my roots here and just carry on living. You know, it was, like I said, it was a comfortable life. But yeah, so I decided I need to change my career because the degree that I have, it's very, specific. So I decided that I needed to upgrade my education level. And obviously, it's been so long since I've been in a university. Things have changed. I just can't plant myself in a new industry without proper knowledge and proper guidance. Things have changed. And that brought me to I remember it was last year, around this time last year, June, July, when I caught COVID on the ship and nothing was done about it, that I was sitting in isolation in my room for about a week and I was seriously contemplating, what do I need to do next? And this was when I couldn't breathe properly. My lungs were on fire constantly, like even with simple breathing. And if I would just walk within my cabin, my heart rate would just escalate. I felt like I was in trouble. It was really serious. And I've never had a health issue like this. And for the first time, if you experience this and your body is just reacting in ways where you don't understand what's going on with it, it freaked me out a bit. And I sat down contemplating, what do I need to do in life? What is my calling? Because I don't need to do this anymore. I have financial stability now because I have sailed for 12 years. And if you're at sea that long, you don't have to pay for half the things like food or for the longest time, rent even. So none of your expense or going out or nothing. There's no expense when you're sailing. So I had financial stability and now I needed to ask myself, what do I need to do? What is my calling? What do I really like to do? And the answer was quite obvious. I've always been fascinated by space. More in terms of the philosophical sense as well, exploration, who else is out there, why are we here, those kinds of questions. But in addition to that, planets and the motion of planets and space exploration, any probes that we've sent over the past couple of decades, Voyager 1, Parker Solar Probe, for instance, the recent launches, and obviously the Mars rovers. I'm really, really interested in all of that stuff. Like, I would read on endlessly about it, listen to podcasts about it, like, on loop. So I figured this is what I need to do. I mean, yes, it's a big deviation, but with 12 years of experience under my belt, I do know a thing or two about how things work and how I can get about. And there are a lot of parallels, because if things work a certain way, the same technology with minor alterations is in fact used elsewhere as well, you know, because this is just how the things work, you know. So if you know it, and I do know it because it's 12 years again. So I got about, and then I had to think, like, what do I do? And then when it comes to space, I personally believe that USA, for instance, is years and decades ahead of everyone else. They're planning some really ambitious plans in the next couple of years. Like, the Artemis missions are coming up. There's Mars missions coming up. It's crazy how far ahead they are. And they're manned missions. So the other two options were obviously China and Russia. But who wants to go there? They're just different. And, you know, I don't think I would fit in. Then, of course, there's India. And before you accuse me of brain drain, I did apply in Indian universities. I gave the exam. I gave GATE. And it was a disaster because I didn't have time to study. That's an excuse, let's say. But I wasn't... if you don't have base knowledge and you're trying to study off YouTube, then it's a problem. And the weird thing is, in this GATE exam, they were asking you questions about aerospace before you even study aerospace. So I don't know how that works. But I guess it is what it is, but I didn't get in. That got me thinking about US and specifically, you know, universities like MIT and Caltech. They're like the cutting edge of innovation. In addition to that, space for me is the cutting edge of innovation and engineering, because whatever happens there, that's the top level of stuff we can build and the things we have built. That then trickles down to other parts of our life. For instance, scratch-resistant lenses that cameras now have are an invention which has come from that sector. Lasers, for instance, which now are used for laser eye correction surgery, came from the space industry. Memory foam mattresses, stuff like that. You know, it all came from the space industry. So for me, that was the cutting edge, and I really wanted to be a part of that, because that is what honestly fascinates me and drives me. Like, I want to be there. The popular choice for, let's say, people my age, and I will not hide the fact that I've just turned 34. Yes, it's a big change at this age. The popular choice for most of my colleagues and peers have been, things like MBAs and logistics management and things like that. But that is just not my calling. If it works for you, it works for you. Great. I am just not a desk job guy. I don't like it. I like to be on my feet. If I'm on a desk too long, I get restless. I do not enjoy it. But so in multiple respects, it kind of fit in. So here's what I did. Now let's get into it. 10 minutes in, let's get into it. I think the first thing is to have clarity about what you want to do. Now, there are the various parallels about this. Like, there can be instances where you are choosing what to do based on what is popular these days, you know, so that you can get a quick job or an easy job. Immediately, I can think of data science and computer science, because that have been the common fields. But now I feel like they've been over flooded with applicants, and everybody is doing data science. It's like how a couple years ago, everybody was doing digital marketing, and they're just flooded now. So, you know, it's everywhere. So it's a question of what you should do versus what you want to do. You know, it's one of those things. Again, I'm thinking if you're planning to study in the US, I guess you have some financial stability, some. So maybe you have a bit of leeway of pursuing your passion rather than what the industry demands. That's, again, it's subjective. It's up to you. So first would be to identify what you want to do. And then the next would be to identify what are the best universities offering this course. Because again, in the end, if you want to, you know, if you're not a good university, the chances of landing a good job or having a good future in the end, it just looks good on your resume if you have a degree from MIT, Harvard, whatever, the big dogs. And then again, I would say most of these universities have a similar approach when it comes to admission. Now, most of them have done away with GRE, and I'm talking about engineering-specific courses, because I don't know about MBAs. I have not applied for MBAs or any other courses for that matter. It's a very similar approach. Most of them are done away with GRE. Some still require you to have GRE, which is what I found out much later. Like, I had applied to a university, and then I found out that, oh, shit, they need GRE. Pardon my language. And I had about a month to study for it, and I just about missed out on the cutoff scores for that university, and I obviously didn't get in. But do your research, see what all is required if the university does in fact need a test score. A lot of them require IELTS, your English speaking competency course. So luckily I had that already, and I did that in February of 2022 on a whim, and I had like 2 weeks to study, and I scored like an 8 band. So that was fine. I had that. But GRE is something that maybe not all will require, but again, do your due diligence and look it up. Next would be to apply. And again, application process is now different. Like I said, most of them now emphasize on your essay, your college essay, your statement of purpose or statement of intent. Now, there are a varying amount of strategies for this. You go online and there'll be a lot of YouTubers or blog posts who will try to guide you about how you should go about writing this. I stuck to something very, very simple. I stuck to honesty. I kept it very simple. I wrote 2 pages and I honestly laid out my intent of what I have been doing and what I want to do and why this degree is important to me. And that worked for me, I would say. Most people say, you know, you need to show your diversity, talk about your struggles, talk about where you've come from, talk about this. I mean, fine, if that works, works. Whatever works, works. For me, being honest worked for me. I mean, I laid it out bare that this is what I've been doing for the last so many years. This is why I needed a change, and this is why I need to do this, and this is why your institution is the best fit for me. And it worked. The other thing I would say is be very mindful of what degree do you want, because I almost screwed up here. And luckily, I applied for the right degree in the right university, and that's where I got in. Like, for instance, there's Masters of Science in Aerospace Engineering, and then there's Masters of Engineering in Space Engineering. They sound very similar. One is a more research-based approach, which is the Masters of Science, and one is a very hands-on approach, which is the Masters of Engineering. And in my college essay, I wrote that I want to be a systems engineer who understands the system of how the things work, and, you know, be a part of that, because that's what I have been doing. And I know systems in and out, and I know how things work. So that was a minor mistake that I made in a few applications, and that's probably why I didn't get in, because I have no research experience, and that's what some of these degrees wanted. So be very careful of what you apply for. They can sound similar, is what I'm saying. Just do your due diligence. That college essay is number one. Then the other thing they emphasize now on is letters of recommendation. Now, it was a bit of a struggle for me because, I mean, who's my boss? Like, my boss changes every ship. I don't know. So I had to ask a few people, couple of chief engineers. Obviously, there's nobody in the office who would write me a letter of recommendation because, I mean, I don't know, they can't. They're not my bosses, they're just HR, right? So I spoke to a few former bosses of mine, they were kind enough to write me letters of recommendation, and I submitted those. Nice and brief, very simple. Some of them give you a format of what kind of questions they want you to answer. For example, MIT gave you a format. Answer these questions in your letter of recommendation and submit it to us. So that was easy to follow. Some of the other ones require you to write paragraphs, and that's also different. But the intent is the same. They want to hear from other people if you're worthy. And what I did was I had people write letters of recommendation, and they were generic. So it wasn't university specific. And then I just had them sign it, and I kept copies of that, and I uploaded those to every college application that I did. Not necessarily a good idea, but that's convenient. Some universities would prefer a very, university specific letter of recommendation. But my course being my course, my bosses are either sailing or they're home with their families. I didn't want to trouble them, so I kept it simple and generic to all universities, and I just uploaded the same thing everywhere. And I guess it worked, but the approach could also be to write university-specific letters of recommendation. That could also work. Post that, I guess identify what universities you want to get in. All I did was I put in a simple Google search of best universities for aerospace engineering in the USA, and I got a list from some website, whatever the first link is. And I looked at the first 7 or 8 universities, and I applied to them. That was it. It listed MIT, Caltech, Stanford, the big dogs. So I applied to all of them. And I guess then it's a case of the agonizing wait. And that's what I did. I finished all my exams and I finished all my applications, and I had a month to, just wait and do nothing. And that's when I took my bike out and I toured all of India. That's different. But slowly, I started getting these letters from these universities. And here's the thing, the chances of getting into a top university are very less. For example, MIT gave me a rejection letter, and it said the success rate this year has been 6% or something. So yes, you can get disheartened if you don't get the number one priority in your list. But I guess it's good to be realistic, I guess. Probably there are more deserving candidates. And I attended a Zoom call organized by MIT for potential, students for this program. And I spoke to some people who were working already with the Department of Defense. And they were making, missiles and rockets for the defense of that country. And I was like, okay, I do not belong here because these guys are miles ahead. And it's got to be realistic, I guess. And then obviously some universities focus on diversity. Yes, there's a whole Supreme Court thing going on right now, but some do emphasize on diversity to have a diverse campus. I guess it, boosts creativity and, independent thought and, different points of view and stuff like that. May not fit that criteria. There are a bunch of things. I mean, I didn't want to dwell on it, but I guess I didn't get in for whatever reason. And 6% is a very low percentage of applicants, so that's fine, I guess. And slowly this started coming in, and it was getting a bit depressing because I was on a bike ride, and then MIT rejected, and then Caltech refused, and then Stanford refused, and something else refused or whatever. And eventually, out of the 8 universities where I applied, 2 of them accepted me. And again, mind you, they were in the top 8 of that list. I did not even look at the ones further down. I think 8 or 10 was my safe bet. And I think each application fee was in the $150 to $100 or $200 range, roughly. So I spent good, I think, 35,000 rupees just on college application fees. That's it. I was just I was pumping it everywhere. Probably more than that. I don't recall now. 35,000 was probably one day's expense. Money I spent on one day, on one particular day. Overall, it probably would have been high. I'm not exactly sure about what works. And then out of the 2 universities I got in to, one of them was offering the Masters of Science program, and the other one was offering a Masters of Engineering program. And then I realized, what I really wanted to do all along was the Masters of Engineering program in space engineering. So I opted for that one. And it was good that I had options, I could pick and choose. And that's when the story begins. It's not all written in stone just yet. College acceptance obviously is one big hurdle. There are a plethora of hurdles coming forward, right? Acceptance is one. Immediately after you get the acceptance, you are supposed to accept the admission, because cases are where people get accepted in multiple universities and they opt for something else. So acceptance is key, number one. Post that, the paperwork begins. What they want you to do soon after is post your financials. And based on those documents, they issue something called the I-20. Now, this is a document which is submitted by the university you've accepted to the U.S. Department of Immigration or Homeland Security or whatever, and that states that, yes, this person has been admitted in our university and we are offering him an admission. Once that information is uploaded, the I-20 is signed, and based on that document, you can then apply for a student visa. So that is very important. For financials, I spoke to a whole bunch of institutions. Yes, this was a university which required a hefty tuition fee. I did not want to spend it out of my pocket, so I had to take a loan. And there are a lot of institutions which are offering these things. There's Avance, there's all kinds of banks offer student loans, for instance. But it depends on how much and how much will you get without collateral. Because I did not want to be a burden on anyone else. I did not want to put my parents' house as a collateral. I don't want to. It's not up for a debate. So luckily, I applied to HDFC Credila. They gave me a loan of about 50 lakhs for I don't know what some percentage, but that's it. They said 50 lakhs maximum. Then I applied to Axis Bank, I think, and they were giving me 90 lakhs, but I needed to park an FD of some amount in their bank. And then I can't touch that FD for some reason or whatever. Or if I wanted more, I had to put the house on collateral. Don't want to do that. Then I went to ICICI Bank. Now, bless these people. They gave me a loan straight away because I had an account already. I had a few investments through ICICI Bank. They said, it's all good. You know, we can give you a loan up to 1 crore without any problem. And I was like, this is perfect. So I took it. And then they issue you a document basically saying that, you know, we are covering Mr. Sharma for this much amount for the tuition fee and whatever. And that's it. That, with that document, you send that to the university, they issue you an I-20. With that I-20, you go for the US visa. Now, that's where things got really interesting. I finished all my visa, sorry, my I-20. I got my I-20 on the 15th of May-ish, I think. And I immediately went on the US Embassy website to apply for a visa. Straight away, it said, there are no applications. And I was like, damn, now this is a problem. So you can have the I-20. If you don't get a visa in time, it's just pointless. That's absolutely pointless. So I got a bit worried there. I was like, oh, damn, this is so... Mind you, till now, I've not paid anything. I've only shown them my financials. I've not paid anything to anybody. So the university, even. I've still not paid anything to the university, right? That comes later. But this is a big hurdle. If you don't get a visa, obviously you can't even enter the country. Forget about getting acceptance and stuff. So I was a bit worried. And straight away, I mailed the university asking, what are my options? In case I don't get a visa, what are my options? They said, if you manage to join, within a month of the course starting, we can still accommodate you. We can send you the course material and study material online or through email, and you can submit your assignments through email. You can attend Zoom calls, things like that. It is possible. Beyond a month, they were recommending joining next term, which would have been in January. And failing that, if that also doesn't work, they said you can join next year as well in the fall. So I said, okay, cool. I have options. It's not entirely lost yet. That gave me a bit of, I calmed down a bit after hearing that conversation. But I wanted to attend this fall. There was no point in just sitting around wasting time. So I became obsessed with looking up dates for, the visa appointments. I was really obsessed. And the funny thing is, everywhere in the media, it was like, this term, the United States is going to issue 500,000 visas for Indian students. And it's Biden has said this. So it's proper. But there was nothing was moving on the website. And the thing is with this website, if you log in too many times, they just block your entry for a couple of hours. You can't log in again. You're just blocked. And I'm like, well. So I was up day and night. Every like odd hour, I would just get a thought, okay, let me just check. And I would log in and I would check and nothing would have opened. The other thing is I qualified for non-interview visa because I already had a visa. I had I still have a transit visa, a crew member's visa, in case you want to join a ship in the USA, or even I think if your ship goes to the USA, you need that visa. So I had that, and it's valid till 2027. So I qualified for that. So I applied for document submission, and the latest date I was getting was October, and I was like, that's too late. That's after the course begins, and then assuming it takes another month for the visa to come in, that's way too late. That's November. That's too far. So I kept waiting, The dates kept changing for some reason. I remember I logged in one fine day. I was in Bangalore, I think. I was there for my TCS 10K, which was in May 21st, I think. And the date had shifted to the 17th of August. And I was like, this is still workable. If I submitted on 17th of August, I get my visa within a month, I can still kind of sort of make it because the course begins on 28th of August, you know. So I applied for it. I was like, let's just book this before this date also disappears. Let's get something in the water. And I remember I ran my race, I came back, and I was like, you know, it's still too far. It's still August, and you know, if something happens, then it's gone. I should just check again. So I re-logged in the next morning while I was still waiting and recovering from my run. And there were no dates available. July, August, September, nothing available except one date, May 25th, which was 3 days away. And I was like, what the hell? And it said available vacancies one. So I was like, I got to take this. And I straight away clicked yes, 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 book, book, book. And it was done. 25th of May, 3 days later. And I was flying back home to Delhi the same day. And I got it. And I was over the moon. And I was like, yes, things are lining up nicely. So I went on the 25th, submitted my documents. They had some issue with my photograph. They said it needs to be within 6 months. It can't be a year old. I don't know whose face changes in like a year. Like, come on. So anyway, I guess this is what they do. I ran around. There are a whole bunch of people there who made a business of just assisting people with printouts and pictures and photocopies of God knows what. So I just found a guy, took a fresh bunch of pictures and submitted them, and it was done. They said, okay, your visa's, it's done. I was like, great, that was easy. And then I forgot all about it. And I opted for, they send you your passport once it's done. You don't have to collect it. You pay a little extra. They courier your passport back to you for like $600 or something. So did that, and the passport went to my parents' house because I didn't know where I was going to be. I was moving around. I was, I don't know. I would just pick up my bike on a whim and just disappear for a bit. So I didn't want to be in that situation. So it went to my parents, but I was still around. And they got the passport back on the 7th of June, and it said, right now we are denying your visa. You need to come see us in the embassy within 1 year of the date of, date written on this piece of paper. And I was so upset. I'm like, can nothing just go seamlessly in my life? Like, come on, what is this about? So I went there and I read through the document. It didn't specify much. They said, just bring this piece of paper and your passport, and we don't need to see anything else, but just come see us at any time and we'll just do an interview and that's it. So that's what I did. I immediately went back to my parents' house, picked it up, and I went to the embassy the next morning. If you're not familiar with the embassy, most of them, all of them don't allow you to have cell phones. Number one, any electronics, no watches, no fancy gizmos, no freaking Apple Pro, Vision Pro. None of that stuff is allowed inside. You can't have bags. Some of them really crack down on these bags, like backpacks. You can have like these jute folders or see-through plastic folders where you put in your documents, and that's about it. And some of them still emphasize on wearing masks inside. So carry a mask. I didn't have a mask. Luckily, some gentleman had a spare mask and I borrowed it from him. It would have been a real issue there. So anyway, I landed there at 8 o'clock in the morning and got into line and entered the embassy. And I was sent straight to window number 21 because of this piece of paper that they had sent me. And I was in line behind two people, and both of them got their visas approved. And it was just a regular conversation, like, what are you studying? Why do you want to study? And how are you financing this operation? And then it was my turn, and this kind lady asked me, you've done marine engineering for so long. Why do you want to do space engineering now? So I gave her my reasons. She said, how are you funding this? I told her everything. And after a brief 5-minute conversation, she said, okay, your visa is approved. And you'll get it by post in the next week. And I was like, okay, that was a bit unnecessary, but sure, I'll take a win at any time. So that was it. It was an easy 5-minute interview, nothing to it. So I came back home, and then 1 week later, visa was here, and that was it. End of story. So with that, with the visa, once the visa is confirmed, then I went and booked my flight tickets. That's another issue. Lot of weird options. Some of them, if it's a weird rule, like if you're flying through Europe with two cities as your layover, you need a Schengen visa. If it's just one city, you probably don't. Some countries require you to have a visa. For instance, there's a flight which goes from India to Tokyo, so you need a visa in Japan. And then from Japan, you fly to LA, and then from LA, you go wherever else you want to go. There's a whole bunch of flights which are super weird. Some have baggage restrictions. Some only offer free cabin baggage, and anything extra, you have to pay for it. Indigo, for instance, does this. They only give you 7 kilograms of cabin baggage, and everything else is weighed, and you have to pay on the spot, which is so, budget airlines. Like, stop it. I booked a flight out of London Heathrow. I still have my UK tourist visa, so there shouldn't be a problem in case they mess around with it a little bit. And then it's straight to Detroit. Trouble now could be bad weather, because the weather patterns are changing. Normally by August, everything dies down, but now everything's getting pushed back. So I don't know if some snowstorm hits or some tornado hits or God knows what hurricane hits from the Atlantic. They can cancel flights. That'll be a problem. That's a conundrum I'm living with, but I'm sure I'll figure it out. Even if you join a day or two late, I guess it's fine, because now it's all final. Visa's here, tickets are here, and everything is in place. So that's it. So yeah, that's been my journey so far. I am dealing with housing at the moment. That is another issue that you have to deal with. There are a lot of scams running around. People offering fake properties which don't exist. People giving fake contracts, charging extra. Talk to your university people for this. My university, for instance, has an international center where you can show them the contracts that you have been offered by these housing agents, and they can look at it because they live there and they know what is real and what isn't. So housing is still not finalized. That's the last piece of the puzzle which is still left. And then the only other thing left is paying the university for the first term. Now that's another thing where it's a bit different, and this is knowledge to me, and this was a learning experience where, like, for instance, in India, if you enroll in a course, the subjects and the duration of the course are fixed. You have to study this, and this is what this degree means. You studied this. But over there, I was surprised to find that you have something like a shopping cart. You have to pick the things you want to study in that term. Okay? You need 19 core credits in addition to some other credits, which all add up to 31 credits in the end to graduate. Obviously, it needs to be related. You can't just like pick whatever. And with 31 credits, even if you finished in 3 terms or 2 terms or whatever, you can graduate like at any time. You know, some people take years and some people take 1 year or 2 years to graduate. And then I asked for a list of other courses that some previous students have taken. And this kind lady sent me this Excel sheet, and it had a whole bunch of courses which people took on the side. Like, some people studied music theory, some people studied guitar, some people studied, I don't know, Korean language and stuff like that, along with space engineering. These are all space engineers who have graduated from this university. So you can learn any master's course. You can apply for anything as long as you can do it, I guess. So I picked 3 core courses because I needed to, it's good to add up to your course load and, the necessary ones. So that add up to about 12. Or 11, I think it's 11. One of them is 3 credits. So it's 4, 4, and 3. And then I picked one more, which was not a core credit, but I really wanted to study this. And it was Planet Sciences, which is just sounds fantastic to me. There are a few other courses which I want to do, and I know I want to do them next term because I didn't want to like overburden myself. Bearing in mind, I graduated in 2009 or 10. 10 was the whole sailing semester, so that doesn't count. So 2009 was the last time I was in a classroom, like a proper classroom. It's been a while. Yeah, and I didn't want to like overburden myself because, yeah, it's a master's course. They're going to throw stuff at you and immediately. And I have had some dealings with the university system in the US. I did that music theory course from Berkeley University online where they give you real credits, and with enough credits, you can get a bachelor's degree without even going there. And I could see what it's about. They teach you something a week, and within the end of the week, you submit an assignment based on what you've understood. It's very hands-on, and that's what I like. So they're going to throw stuff at me right away, and I know that. I know what's coming. And it's good to start slow, I would say, especially in my position. I mean, if you're, like, I've been talking to some of these people who are joining the same course as me, and they've just graduated from their bachelor's. I guess it will be easier for them because they're used to the whole classroom studying environment, whatever. For me, I know it's going to be it's going to be a little tricky, but I'm sure I'll get there. I mean, I have been sitting for competency exams and, you know, doing all these courses here and there. So we'll see how that goes. So, yeah, key takeaways. In summary, I would say, identify what you want to study. It could be based on what you want or what the industry demands or where the jobs are. Depends on your situation. That's your call. Identify the universities you want. Have preferences, top, second, and third, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, you know, whatever, diversify. In some cases where people apply for random courses in random universities with the intent to just emigrate to the US, sometimes you do get caught, you know, by these immigration people. Like, this person's applied for this course and whatever course in random universities. I think there's one university which my friend of mine had told me where people know that this university is just people just going there to emigrate. There's just pointless. I forgot. I can't remember its name. That being said, identify what you want to study, where you want to study, and then go through the application process with the application statement of intent. I mean, it's up for debate. I stuck to honesty. It worked for me. Other people can use flurry language and, you know, try to extrapolate their achievements in life, I guess. Sure, whatever works, whatever gets you in the front door. Visa process, I talked about it. It's pretty straightforward. And if you do get denied a visa, I'm not sure what exactly happens if you get denied. I've never been denied. So it just, yeah, I have no information about that. And then once you get in, deal with paying the university, figuring out your financials, moving there, and then starting to study. Yeah. I will post more stuff. I mean, I'm not leaving for another couple of weeks. So once I get there, I will continue my journey. I will keep you informing about what it's like to study this course in particular and what life in the USA is like for somebody who's never been there. I've had 3 US visas before, never been there. And what master's programs are like and what I'm learning that week. I guess, yeah, that could be a series. Let's do that. And yeah, stay tuned for more. This was episode 99. Again, if you have any questions, I'm sure that you have a lot of questions. And based on these WhatsApp groups that I'm joined in, people have all kinds of questions. Like everything from what utensils should I bring and how do I get an international driver's license to how are the buses. There are all kinds of questions. I mean, students have all kinds of questions, I guess. To them, I say, where is your spirit of adventure? I mean, fine, after you figure out housing and whatever, just figure the rest out, you know, live, see, I guess. But I don't know, everyone's different. Yeah, like recently there was a conversation about people wanting to bring idli makers, you know, when they go to the US from India. So I was like, great, people are going to make idlis. That's good. Yeah, great. Anywho, you can find us on Instagram. Just search for the Two Bros Podcast and the first link with the same face as the podcast image art. That's the same picture on the Instagram page. You can find us. There's nobody else with our name on Instagram. So you can just find us. It's easy. Give us a follow. Give us a like. Give us a share. Tell us what you like. Tell us what you don't like. If there is something you want to talk about, come on the episode. We can talk about it. I love hosting people. It's just that people are so busy these days. And that coupled with me not wanting to disturb a lot of people, it ends up being me talking to myself for the like 40 minutes. Yeah. Anyway, with that sorted, this was episode 99. Thank you for being here. And I will see you on episode 100 where we may or may not do something fun. Let's see. Time will tell. Alrighty. See you around.